This week, we've had an opportunity to come together as convened by the Church of Sweden and the United Nations Population Fund in Sigtuna, near Stockholm. And we have had the pleasure of discussing the theme of women, faith, and development, which is fundamentally an opportunity to convene women and men of faith who work in religious institutions and organizations, but also those who work in international development and international human rights NGOs, to discuss the opportunity of seeing how the intersection between religion, human rights, and sustainable development happens, what impact there is, and what kind of necessary solidarity and understandings of religion we need to be able to create in a way that is empowering to women and empowering also to gender equality. We have with us around the table Dr. Agnes Obuom, who is the moderator of the World Council of Churches. We have Ms. Zaina Anwar, who is the CEO, or the chief executive and founder of Musawa, a network for equality of Muslim women in the family. We also have Ms. Julie Clegg from the University of Glasgow and a Catholic social teaching specialist. We also have Ms. Meera Khanna, who is the founding director of the Guild of Service, an NGO based on social service inspired by Hindu and interfaith ideals that is based in India. And last but by no means least, we also have Dr. Deborah Weissman, the immediate past president of the International Council of Christians and Jews from Jerusalem. Myself, I am Azza Karam, and I am the senior advisor on culture and social development at the United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA. Thank you, everybody. I think it's been a wonderful couple of days. We've had an opportunity to come together under the auspices of the UN Population Fund, UNFPA, and the Church of Sweden, who have been very gracious in hosting this meeting that's brought together at least 30 women and men from around the world. The opportunity has been fundamentally to give voice to the men and women of faith who come from different walks of life, from different countries. And we, I think between us, represent all the major religions, minus we unfortunately couldn't make our colleagues from the Buddhist community join. There was a cancellation at the last minute, but I think we have Catholics, we have Protestants, we have Muslims, we have the Jewish representation, we have Hindu representation. So I think we have and we have the Baha'i representation. So we have a nice range of religions coming around the table. We've had 2 days to converse with one another on some of the thorniest issues, gender equality, but specifically sexual reproductive health, gender identity related issues. We've not shied away, I think, from tackling some of these issues, but we've also had an opportunity to listen to one another. And we've actually shared. You've been remarkably gracious, each one of you, in the way that you have shared. With heart, with passion, with intellect. And I think this is one of the things I've heard from all of you, is that in a way this is this kind of sharing is needed, because it's a safe space that convenes us together across what would otherwise be very, very many boundaries. And yet somehow we've come together rather fluently. We've interacted without a sense of boundaries, I think. At least that's what you have taught me through the conversations you've had. What would be very helpful for us to reflect a little bit about, and I'd love to hear from each of you, is why you would think that such a meeting is important, is of value to each of you, and also why you would think that organizations or institutions like the United Nations and the Church of Sweden in this case, but other similar organizations, why they should be see the value of this kind of a hosting from your own perspective. You know, what value do you think there is in having the so-called international community and the churches collaborating? And each of you can speak to that. And by the churches, I mean religious institutions. So each of you can speak to that, obviously, in your own, from within your own capacities. I'd like us to begin by just hearing from Agnes Aboum, who is also the moderator of the largest ecumenical organization the world knows, which is the World Council of Churches, and it's an organization of the Protestant churches of the world. Agnes, please tell us what you feel has been the value of this kind of a convening and why you think it is of value for us to be able to collaborate in such a manner.
It has been an important moment, especially for me personally, but also for those of us who came from the World Council of Churches. First, because this is one of the first spaces organized that brought together women, men from the different religious traditions, and also from academia, as you rightly put it. It was also important because we affirmed that human rights are a gift to everybody and a right for everybody to access, and hence the need for us to actually bring the voices from the constituencies we represent that yearn to be heard, where they have not had a chance to be heard. And this platform, this space was important, particularly listening to the different voices on where we are at. And in terms of our voices at the UN, it is critical that we remind ourselves that this space helped us to see that actually there is need for diversity of voices at the UN, for different stories, for different narratives, not only of the religious leaders, but also of women, of children, of the different target groups that we represented at this gathering. Finally, I think it has been an important space for me because in the pilgrimage of justice and peace, we in the World Council are saying we want to move together. We want to invite all people of goodwill, people of faith, men and women, people of all shades to come and pilgrimage in the search for justice and peace. This search for justice and peace cannot be attained if some of our targets, some of our communities are not at the table. We recognize that as we journey together, as we pilgrim together, we bring different resources that will enrich one another so that we can become the whole family of God, the family that can enjoy life in abundance. That is important. Beyond the pilgrimage of justice and peace, we also are affirming that we have a population, and majority of whom are women in the world, and sustainable development goals that have just been adopted do say that we shall not leave anyone behind, irrespective of gender, of race, of sexuality, whatever. And therefore, this meeting was important in affirming that process, and it's a beginning of a journey in our view.
Great. So here is a segue to perhaps Zaina. You've pioneered amongst within the Muslim world, particularly Malaysia, a movement called Sisters in Islam. You've also pioneered and co-founded the Musawa, a movement for, I believe it is equality within the family, but you can tell us more later. From your Muslim perspective, or from your perspective based in the Muslim context, rather, tell us a little bit of what, you know, reflect a little bit on what Agnes has shared and your own sense about the importance of this.
Well, I think it's really affirming to be here and to find out that the challenges we face in the Muslim world is not ours alone. You know, that in all faith traditions, patriarchy has dominated and has defined, you know, what the religion means and should mean. And very often the dominant discourse is a discourse that doesn't reflect the realities on the ground, and particularly the realities of women. And this is why for us in Sisters in Islam and in Musawa, it is really important for women to bring to the table, to the front table, our experience of living the religion. And that even if we might not have the kind of traditional religious authority that is traditionally recognized as giving us the right and the authority to speak on the religion, that we as women who are affected by the teachings of the religion, by the laws of the religion, by the practices of the religion, that gives us the authority to speak on the religion. We don't have to be able to, you know, study 1,400 years of the tradition of Islam here in this case before we can have the right to speak on the religion. And we take the stand that if religion is used as a source of law and public policy in Muslim countries, then everyone affected by those religious-based laws and policies have a right to speak out. And being here with, you know, women and men of faith, of different faiths, and listening to the similar challenges that we all face in terms of, you know, dealing. You know, why is it, it's always about women. It's always about women's rights. It's always about equality. It's always about, you know, family planning. It's always about, you know, sexual identity and sexual orientation. Why in all these contentious issues, you know, the realities on the ground have not moved our traditional religious leaders to really find solutions and answers to deal with these realities. You can't dismiss people's realities and people's experience, you know. So I think what we're trying to do, you know, we want to be feminist and we want to be Muslim. We want to be feminist and we want to, you know, live in the sexual, you know, gender identity and sexual orientation that we were born with. We want to be feminist and, you know, deal with our family members who have HIV AIDS and embrace them. You know, so this whole idea of excluding people who are different from you, for me, is an outrageous understanding of what God means to all of us in this world. So I really feel coming together, sharing the challenges we face, and sharing, and what I think is very empowering, sharing the possibilities for life enhancing, life empowering, life affirming interpretations and understanding of our faith tradition, you know, gives us hope. You know, that a better future is possible, you know, and I think being able to share that is extremely important in coming together.
Brilliant, thank you. I think moving on to the other large religious community in the world, which is the Hindu community. Meera, you've been a pioneer of so many different social initiatives in your own community and a scholar in your own right. And a faith activist to some extent. Tell us a little bit from your perspective, based in India, what you felt to be the value of this kind of a coming together under the auspices of the UN and the Church of Sweden.
You know, in many parts of the world, the space for civil societies and for NGOs and non-profit organizations to speak, those democratic spaces are getting shrunk. And the UN is one place still which hears these voices. And I think it's very important that these voices, whether they're faith-based organizations or human rights-based or women rights-based organizations, it's important that their voices are heard if we want to take this world towards a just world. Because peace is no longer, we don't have the option of peace anymore. It's the only only thing left for global survival. And peace cannot happen. Peace is not just the absence of war. Peace is also when humans are not able to assert their rights and they don't have equal access to the resources, to the facilities, to the amenities which gives a human human life dignity. So I think that's important, that the UN is that space which hears the voices. And secondly, the UN was based on plurality. So I think bringing so many plural voices together, which is very important. The world was never created to be homogeneous. It was a plural, multicultural, diverse kind of a world. And the UN's very entity is based on this diversity. That is one point. The other point that I do want to emphasize is that, particularly in relation to women, the next Commission on the Status of Women focus is going to be violence on women. Mm. And a large part of the violence on women is always conducted in the name of religion, because religion gives that so-called sanctity to the violation of women's rights. So I think it is important that we revisit many of our religious doctrines and scriptures, because I fail to believe that religion was meant to divide. It could not have been. And I fail to believe that religion in its diverse forms was meant as a violation of a human right. Having said that, the third point that I do want to raise is that many religions are there, and all these religions originally began as an assertion of human rights. But religion was never meant to divide. But now religion has started dividing the human world. That happens when religions become political, or politics becomes religious. So somewhere, I think we have blurred the lines, and those blurred lines are responsible for the kind of situation that the world is facing today. Mm. So I think it is, we need to be courageous, and we need to grab this opportunity to revisit the actual meaning of religion. And I'm sure there are millions of people out there in the world who believe this, but who do not have a space to make themselves heard. And I think this kind of integration of many voices is very vital, so that we can take this intervention forward.
Thank you very much, Meera. Talking about the politicization of religion and the religionization of politics, that's in a sense a very critical segue for Deborah Weissman. You are based in Jerusalem. You have your own scholarly and practitioner experience over the years on working with faith-related issues, with religion, and on revisiting the religious. Please tell us from your own perspective the value of this.
Thank you. I'm speaking actually as the only Jew who was part of this consultation. And I want to thank the organizers for taking into account my own particular dietary needs. I keep kosher, the Jewish dietary laws, and I think I was well fed for the last few days. Excuse me. I want to just take exception with what my Hindu sister has said, because it depends what you mean by politics. And it seems to me that religion can and perhaps should influence the polity, the public sphere. And I'm thinking even of that great leader in your country, Mahatma Gandhi, and two great leaders in the United States, Martin Luther King Jr. and Abraham Joshua Heschel. And all of these people and many others took their religious values into the public sphere. And so I don't believe that they should be so rigidly separated. I probably agree with you in certain aspects of the mixture, but I think that as religious people, we do have something to say. about how society should be organized and should be structured and should have room for all the various voices that have been mentioned earlier, and I'm not going to repeat what other people have said. But I think that as religious women, we found over the past 2 days a lot of commonality within diversity. And I think that balance is very important, and we should celebrate it, that we have things in common, and we all believe in that God the Creator has created all of us equal, and yet we worship God in diverse ways. And actually, I believe that if God couldn't be worshiped in more than one way, it would take away from God's greatness. God is universal, and we worship God in particular ways. I'll just add one more point, since it was mentioned that I do live in Israel. I have a colleague in Israel who says, to be religious is to be inter-religious. And I'm not sure that everyone agrees with that, but I think my own interreligious experience has enhanced my Jewish identity. I have found common ground with feminists of many backgrounds. We have a common struggle against fundamentalism and extremism in our own communities. And I have to say that for me, one of the powerful experiences of being here was spending a day and a half sitting right next to a Palestinian colleague, a scholar of gender studies at one of the important Palestinian universities. And while we certainly don't agree on a number of things, I think we got along very well because we do share some common hopes and dreams.
Thank you for mentioning that. That's actually a very gracious point of view. You are sitting next to Professor Fadwa Labadi from Al-Quds University. And we all actually noticed that the two of you did sit together in harmony throughout, and that was one of the sources of joy for all, I think. Would that we would see much more of that on a regular basis in the region. Julie Clegg, you're a scholar, a very, very vested scholar in Catholicism and Catholic social teaching. You've been a great source of knowledge to all of us in the meeting about the importance of Catholic social teachings on gender and sexual reproductive health and rights in particular. At one point, I recall you showed us a map or sort of a graph that showed how the Catholic Church in different countries around the world, the kind of adherence on and the feelings towards certain issues that are deeply contentious. And it was a very, very interesting comparative analysis that all of us felt very much informed by. Given this wealth of knowledge that you have from your own faith tradition, your own engagement, both as a scholar and as an activist for many years, how did you find this particular kind of a gathering of women and men from different parts of the world focusing on some of the most contentious issues that religion often is used as a excuse for?
Yeah, so we've got these issues affecting women and men, girls and boys across the globe, issues of their rights being trashed in various parts of the globe, the amazing activism going on within religious communities and beyond religious communities to fix some of the things that are dysfunctional about our world. We've got these amazing sustainable development goals trying to achieve greater justice and peace across the globe, eradicate human suffering. And in many ways, the Catholic Church is a powerful witness and ally in trying to bring about change, the sustainable development goal agenda, one might say. And I'm very aware of the extraordinary work within the Catholic world to create a world where each person is valued as a person of human dignity. But hear this, last month there was a synod in Rome on the family. It was trying its best to tackle issues of challenges really facing families across the globe where rights are being suppressed. And yet, in many ways, it was hamstrung as an event, and it was a failure in many ways, let's be honest. Because, of course, with 300 religious leaders, actually bishops from across the globe, they couldn't do huge amounts, they couldn't address every issue, they couldn't fix every problem. But also, there was a huge deficit of expertise and experience. They were not sat around the table listening to a huge amount of experience of women and men, boys and girls at the grassroots who are most affected by these challenge faces facing families. And that's a tragedy. It's a structural deficit. How ironic that it took some Catholics coming to this event to be in a hospitable and safe space provided by the Church of Sweden, by the UN, and by the rest of our religious communities to allow people from within the Catholic Church to speak about some of those things that they were not given a platform to do within their own religious community. So there's some kind of dysfunctionality there that needs fixing. There's a gap between high-level religious leadership within our churches and what happens at the grassroots. And there are structural and institutional blockages that stop change happening, stop those pastoral responses. So we need to fix that. And partly then, what was very special about this meeting was the co-learning that could go on. It was to hear that actually within these different religious groups, we're suffering similar kind of structural and institutional dysfunctionality, but also we've got things that we can do together that we're stronger. When we identify common problems, we can work together to try and fix them through the interstices of the institutions where maybe things don't often, you know, they fall through the gaps and they don't get fixed unless we can work together. So that co-learning has been important, the solidarity that comes from people saying, ah, a problem shared is a problem halved. And also we can wise up to the strategic things that others across the religions have worked out for themselves. So Massawa, what an amazing example that is, and the Sisters of Islam, for the identification of problems within the tradition and how to deconstruct those life-destroying teachings and reconstruct teachings that are more life-affirming. And we can learn from that good practice within our other religious communities. So that co-learning and diagnostic and also solidarity and support is really the kind of stuff that gives us strength to go forward and move on within our own religious groups when we go back home.
Brilliant. I think this is a beautiful note on which to conclude our conversation. I want to thank each and every one of you. I also want to just emphasize that we, around this very small table, we have the Protestant faith, the Catholic faith, the Muslim faith, the Hindu faith, and the Jewish faith. And we've got women from India, Malaysia, the UK, Kenya, and Israel. And I think that that's precisely the kind of diversity that will help propel us forward. And it's the kind of safe spaces that perhaps only when you can bring together these institutions that are the multilateral institutions like the UN, but also in collaboration with the faith-based partners, that we can offer. It's not just the one safe space, but it's the double safe spaces. So I want to thank you all for your wonderful presence, your contributions, the co-learning and the tremendous learning that you have afforded us, those of us who work in the otherwise known as multilateral secular spaces. I think we are always duly informed and affirmed by each and every one of you. So many, many thanks. And again, thanks to our hosts, the Church of Sweden, for making this entire welcome and hospitality, warm hospitality, very possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.